Coming to you live from the inside of a butthole. My name's Tom, and with me as always is Poop, and this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 4, Feast of the Dicklehorn.
Welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast. I'm Johannes Stauffer.
And I'm not.
Technically true.
I'm Tom. Rich?
That's my name. That's his name.
Yay.
And we're back.
We're back.
With the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
We have returned from
Welcome
our...
Welcome to it.
We've returned from our lengthy hiatus.
It kind of was, I guess. We spent a few odd weeks there, like, recording 2 weeks behind or ahead of release.
Yeah.
It was strange.
I haven't done anything related to the podcast in, like, 2.5 weeks because I don't provide any value other than being the other person in the room while you're recording.
It's pretty much true. Yeah. Yeah. So we're back.
We're back.
From what to us seems like a lengthy hiatus. And to you seems like, oh God, they're doing this again.
It probably doesn't seem any different from anything else.
Yeah.
Johannes was in the woods.
It's true.
He was wrestling Sasquatch.
Man, it rained at the beginning of the week and then just mosquitoes. Just all of the mosquitoes.
I'll bet Sasquatches smell nasty when they get wet.
Oh, they probably just smell nasty all the time.
It's a lot of hair. Yeah. Matted, kind of.
Yeah.
It's real dense. But, like, they're humanoid, so they probably sweat like people and not like dogs. So they get all that sweat up in their hair, and it just gets in there and kind of festers. I'll bet it's gross.
How do gorillas sweat?
I don't know, actually, how gorillas sweat.
Someone write in and tell us how gorillas sweat. We won't check your facts. You can pretty much make up whatever you want, and we'll believe you.
We will. We're
but
stupid
like
that.
But I
want
to see it in the comments or Twitter or other places.
Are we doing the thing where we tell how to contact us already? Is the segment already
this
done?
This is the end of the first segment.
good
People
times.
Are like, oh, thank God it's over already.
I'm so glad it got
These
done.
Things usually feel like they last an hour. Are they always 2 minutes?
At least they're not doing that fanciful pat thing again. That was
Everyone
terrible.
Loved that.
Did they really?
I have no idea. No one tells us anything.
That's true. We get no feedback on this show.
Sometimes Gary posts just nonsense. That's pretty much it. One time my wife posted something.
Didn't he post his math homework one time?
Yeah.
Wasn't it just a bunch of pictures of sea turtles?
It was.
Just
well, those were his answers.
Sea turtle plus hand equals...
Well, he has that wrench now.
Oh,
because he won.
Right, because he can. So that way he can get his hand out of the sea turtle when it gets stuck in there.
So good on you, Gary.
Good
Make
work,
good use.
Gary.
Don't lose the wrench, because I don't know if we can have another one made.
Yeah, we would certainly have to do another Fanciful Pat Adventures
right.
contest.
We anticipated the winner. Like, it wasn't rigged or anything, but we figured...
Well, a lot of people get their hands stuck in sea turtles. It's an epidemic, really.
Yeah, right. It's just, Gary's just the one person.
Oh.
Just that one guy gets...
Just the one?
I think so.
That's it? Oh, we may have a situation. I need to make a phone call.
I ordered a 10,000-piece production run of sea turtle wrenches.
Good times. So what are we talking about tonight, Wilbur?
We're talking about the creative process, which is different from a previous episode in which we talked about our creative process.
Well,
now we're talking about sort of the platonic ideal of the creative process.
Nice Plato reference.
Oh, thanks. I love Play-Doh. It tastes a little salty, but like you can eat it. Still.
Man, when you did you ever make homemade Play-Doh growing up?
Yeah,
that stuff was salty as
salt.
Like, yeah, pretty much. It was pretty. Yeah. Was it at your house that we made homemade Play-Doh?
Like a boatload of it,
and I ate a bunch of
yes.
it. And you're like, why am I friends with you? Why are you
Plus,
here?
We were in like sixth grade. This wasn't like kindergarten Tom being like, oh, yeah, Play-Doh.
It was like senior in high school Tom going, oh, yeah, I could use some salt today.
Well,
like, it worked out.
I think you had never heard that it was edible before. You were like, wait, you can eat Play-Doh? Like, all of this stuff is edible. And we're like, yes, you can. And you were like, I'm doing it. And then you did.
It was good.
Yep.
Yeah.
If you're into salt. So though, our the creative process. We talked about our process sort of for designing games,
mm-hmm.
which I guess would really be more our design process than like the creative process. But we both have creative inclinations in life outside of board games, and we've been approaching board games largely as a form of entertainment and only slightly less so as a an art form lately in the podcast, so we figured we'd kind of touch on the creative artistic side of things a little bit more this week. So that's the plan, I understand it.
That was what I thought we were going to talk about.
Cool.
Do you want to go first, or should I?
I can go first, I guess.
It's up to you. Well, do you want a rock, paper, scissors for it?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Ready?
Oh, wait, it's...
On
it's,
shoot. So 1, 2, 3, shoot.
1, 2, 3, shoot. Okay. Is it 2 out of 3, or is it just
Let's
one
do two out of... it's a podcast. Let's just do one.
Okay. You want to... You count.
All right. 1, 2, 3, shoot. Okay. We both threw scissors.
That's a tie. Hold on. There's strategy here. There's psychology going on.
There's psychology. There's not strategy. You ready?
Ready.
1, 2, 3, shoot. Ah! You beat my scissors.
So what does that mean?
That means...
Did we decide?
We didn't.
So one part of the creative process is...
Rock, paper, scissors.
Is having an idea of your goal at the beginning and then abandoning that idea outright as soon as you get started. Because it's about the journey, not the destination.
This is actually kind of a little bit of what I wanted to talk about. I'm going to jump ahead a little bit just because I'll forget otherwise. Another part of the creative process, at least for the two of us, is having a goal in mind, probably abandoning it, but writing a thing and then getting to the end of it and then reviewing it and then deciding you hate it and throwing it away then.
Just despair. Just really just not being happy is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Like just being sad all the time.
Just forever.
Forever. It's a miserable experience. Don't be creative ever. It's terrible. Actually, that's a good part to dig into because I feel like that's sort of the mythology around the creative process. It's like the tortured genius in his Garrett apartment on a river in one of the great cities of the world.
Who's Garrett?
He's the landlord and he's a dick. And it's you're just miserable, but you're out of your nightmarish torment of your hellish existence and the demons that lurk in your soul comes brilliant art and just... Fuck you. Just fuck you. Fuck you and your bullshit forever. Fuck you. Fuck you. Fuck you. Hannes is looking at me going, dude, I have to bleep every one of those.
So many farm animal noises.
Just pick a different farm animal noise for your one here. I'm just going to give you a series now. Fuck you. You don't need to be a miserable cuss with the creative process. You can be a happy cuss if you want. It's fine. You can just do it.
I adore this coming from you. Of all people. Tom has always sort of had this sort of ideal of a writer, of an author. Tom has a master's in creative writing. He's been writing for quite some time. I think he's pretty good at it. I think he probably doesn't think he's all that good at it, if you were to ask him up front, face to face.
It's all shit!
but his favorite authors, especially since college, have been the sorts who... were miserable and broken and descended into alcoholism or whatever, and then largely took their own lives. There are a few of them who are still alive or who survived to a natural death, but not a lot of them.
Hemingway, Faulkner, Cormac McCarthy is a big one. Stephen King.
Yep.
Holy shit, he did a lot of cocaine in the
80s. Yeah, yeah.
Tolkien, who did very well in life, actually, was a perfectly happy man.
Just, but you don't ever lift up Tolkien's creative process as something to be admired. You're like, no, I need a vice. All these good authors were like cripplingly alcoholic. I need to find something to ruin my life so I can finally write the great American novel, which, by the way, is just a concept and a term that makes me just fills me with burning rage.
Yeah, there's nothing good about it.
Yeah, it's stupid. So, but I think what Tom actually said on the air just now is right, that like those things are dumb.
It's dumb.
Just because those things happened to other people who happen to write good books, that doesn't mean it's necessary.
Well, it's interesting to put the counterpoint of Tolkien and Hemingway right next to each other, because both of them, their creativity flows out of having been involved in being shelled and bombed and shot at in the First World War. And they were just such different, such very different people as a result of that.
Yeah. So Tom's creative process, Tom's creativity largely involves writing, at least before we started designing board games together. Mine is more musical, as we've mentioned before.
Johannes is a rapper.
Yep. I write hip hop under the name Tupac.
you may have
heard of me. Don't tell anyone.
He had a little bit. He had some minor success in the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. But now everyone thinks I'm dead, so I can focus on my pop country western.
And your true passion, making board games.
Yes,
I love
yes.
the idea of Tupac as a board game designer.
No, I write music and then I don't show it to anyone because I don't think it's good enough. And that's pretty much how I do things.
See,
I think of the songs that I've outright written, like written all the music and all the words, I've probably two of them to anyone.
Because you did T-Rex, Those Tiny Arms, right?
Yeah, yeah. That might be the best thing I've ever done or will ever do.
It's pretty solid.
And I did one for my band in high school. And then I added to a lot of things. I've worked with other people, but I wouldn't say I wrote that song. I helped. And actually, Tom's been writing, and I've been sort of copy editing his books since high school. Before high school? You start doing that in high school?
I think it was high school it started.
So that's sort of my creative process. It's not so much create a thing and show it to people. It's look at something someone else created and tell them how they can make it better.
I think before high school, I would write a story and show it to you, and then you would say something helpful and yet unkind about it, and then we wouldn't talk for a month.
That sounds about right.
That sounds about like how that would have gone.
So as you can see, we're both very, you know, confident and...
deeply.
Yeah.
Tremendously confident.
You know, we don't second guess ourselves. Or our material.
Today I waited 45 minutes to send an email because it was to a doctor and I was afraid he'd yell at me.
Is that the same thing, though?
No, because he probably would have.
See, I've done a similar thing for the opposite reason, where I will write an email to someone and then have to wait so that I can read it again in an hour and be like... Is this going to cause a problem because of my wording? Or like I'll send it to other people. I'll be like, can you please look over this professional email that I need to send and make sure that I'm not being too snarky because I'm finding it difficult to contain myself right now. And maybe someone else should look at it with fresh eyes.
Fresh eyes are a very important part of the creative process. It's very hard to see.
Don't buy the canned eyes. They're very high in sodium.
No, your best bet is you go to your nearest Starbucks and you just start gouging. They have little spoons up next to the creamer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what those are for. They're for getting the eye out most efficiently without losing a lot of the eye goop in which it floats.
That's really fresh. Like I was going to say, if you don't have the stomach for that, most good farmers markets have someone selling relatively fresh
eyes.
They're
pretty
usually
fresh.
Within a couple days.
Yeah, you'll be okay with those, especially if they're, you know, if they ice them just a little bit.
They're pricey, but, you know, it's worth it.
Yeah, you got to spend. You got to spend if you want to make.
That's true. Eyeball soup or whatever. What are we talking about anymore?
I don't remember. We just started talking, man.
How did we even get to eyeball gouging?
I lost it. I lost it. I don't know. We started talking about the creative process and I got real uncomfortable.
Yeah, well... Yeah,
that's how that usually goes.
That means I'm succeeding.
I know.
So our creative process... I mean, what do you do when you write?
I don't, mostly. But
fair enough.
On the off chance I ever get started on it, I just go for it. You just gotta type whatever. And you have to constantly and continually silence anything that prevents you from writing another sentence or writing the next word. Even if it's just like, there's a better word. No, you've got to drown that in a bucket because it will rapidly get out of control and be like, no, now you have to stop forever because you're a failure and you failed.
So you're of the school that would say, like, write the whole book before you go back and review?
Not necessarily, because sometimes you're just in an editing, rereading type of mood, and you can go back then and review what you've already written, even if you're not all the way done. But if you're trying to get fresh words on the page, just you gotta drown that interior editor. Make him go away for a little bit so you can get more stuff down. Because sometimes you're just writing some deeply derivative crap, and you know it. And you're like, this is bad. This is just... It's bad. You're like, it's fine. I just gotta
get it out.
It's like squeezing a zit.
Ugh.
Because eventually you'll have that silky smooth skin again after it's done, but for now, you got an angry red zit and you got to get some of that pus out.
That is just absolutely disgusting. I do Thank try. You so much for that.
You know, I go for the vivid imagery.
I'm going to think of that every time I edit one of your things. I'm going to be like, oh, this is Tom's zit pus. Just it's like I'm popping your zits. It's just so gross.
It's
just
nasty.
So very, very gross.
It's almost as gross as when you actually pop my zits.
That's not gross. That's just polite.
This is the worst podcast we've ever done.
That's not even a little bit true.
This is completely terrible. Hold on. Let's name check all of your siblings in this so they have to listen to it.
So they have to listen to it?
So that our shame
can be
known.
And then they disown me?
Yeah, good lord. Do you find that's you're under the same thing with music where you've just got to be like, I just have to make this be out there?
Yeah, and I'm terrible at it, which is why I don't show anyone anything.
Fair enough.
I get hung up. But well, the other thing is that like you've been very good in recent years at like, even if not for long stretches of time, when you are working on something, being like, I'm going to get up at 5 and write so that I can write. You know, I'm going to get it done. This
or
is the
least,
time when I
or
have
at least
to do
I've
it.
Been good about lying about that.
Sure. But even that, you know, whatever. Maybe you get a lot more sleep than you claim, I guess. where I don't ever sit down and just try to write. Like, mm-hmm. if someone else has written a song or whatever, and I'm like, no, this can be better. I can sit down and make that happen. Mm-hmm. But when it's like, I'm just going to sit down and try to write a song, or like, even if I have an idea for a song, which rarely happens, I'm not good at making time for it to happen. And if I even manage to make time, I'm not good at doing anything useful with it.
Mm-hmm.
So mostly when I write music, it's like, this whole thing popped into my head at once, or very rarely, like, this is something I just think is good enough to work, be worth hacking out until mm-hmm. it is done. And in those situations, then, yeah, I won't go back and, like, futz with the wording in verse one before I've done the whole thing, or like, play with the mm-hmm. the chords or the melody or anything. I'll hack it out as it is and then get the feel for this. It's funny because learning a song that I've written is actually harder than learning someone else's song. Like I have to, that's a part, it's partially ADHD, it's partially something I know a lot of songwriters experience, where it's just like, it doesn't matter how good it was like the first time through it, if you didn't record that
mm-hmm.
there's no way you're remembering it the way you did it initially. You're mm-hmm. going to go back to that, it's going to be totally different.
I would think, and there's a similar problem when you're trying to revise something, that it would be difficult to keep the any different versions straight in
yeah.
your head when
yeah.
when which draft am I in, which part, and since a given, you know, performance of a song, if you're practicing singing it or running through it that way, is different each time,
right.
subtly in ways that I would never notice because I'm functionally deaf, but that you would notice because you have an ear that works, at least one,
just the one in the middle of my forehead.
Yeah it's creepy and it winks at me. You know, it would be hard to keep track of which version you're working with at any given time.
Yeah.
Similar to how sometimes somebody will offer me feedback on a story and they'll say something and be like, that's in there? What are you talking about? I have no memory of that entire scene. Oh, wow, that's like 40 pages long. I should reread this.
Yeah. It's funny because you have a much better memory for stories than I do, so I don't know how I'm ever able to give you input on stuff that you've written.
Because it's so brilliant and memorable.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. So these are sort of, I don't want to say typical, but I guess more generally accepted as like creative processes that people have and use, things that people do, write music, write books. That's like a
yeah,
thing.
Those are generally things.
Designing board games is not maybe as common. I just know, like, if I tell people I write music, they're like, oh, cool. And if Tom's like, I'm a writer, they're like, oh, what are you working on? And for, like, we design board games, they're like, what is wrong with you? Like, board games?
It takes a little...
For children?
It takes a little bit more explanation than your average...
Adult board games?
You know, actually, when I told my coworker Rhino Crocodile about it, he was pretty... He picked up pretty quick what I was talking about.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cool. That is rare.
It is not common.
So, but you see a lot of that same stuff kind of carry over. Like, we were just talking before we started recording about how, since we started doing the podcast, we pretty much started doing it in the time when we used to spend every week spending a few hours working on game design. And so we haven't gotten as much game design in, and trying to make time for that to happen
in addition to the podcast
is tough. And Tom's comment was like, I just need to make a point of stop not being lazy and working on the games when we're not talking about them with one another, because we work on stuff individually too, except we don't, but we did and we should.
Well, I mean, one of the things though is that too, the creative process in general, and this is a point. Actually, let me back up. Let me tell you a story.
Well, okay.
I remember a piece of writing advice that I got within a couple of weeks of getting to Northern Michigan University back in the day from one of my profs. He was a really cool guy, a history prof, very friendly guy, but he was pointing out how when he was recommending to us as we revised our essays for his class, he's like, you shouldn't just go back and to the same file and make the changes I wrote on here and, you know, edit one word at a time. Mm-hmm. What you should do, if you can find the time to do it, and you should make the time to do it, because I'm the person that I am, and I think you should never sleep, because that was also the kind of guy he was. He's like, you just got to work really hard all the time, forever. Coffee. Come on, man. It's not hard. Take math if you need to. But what you should do is you should open up a blank document and start at the beginning of the essay and retype the whole thing, working what I suggested into it as you type, because writing is a holistic process. And in addition to thinking about the words and editing and whatnot, there's the feel of the keys against your fingers. There's the sound. There's the visual of the screen. There's all of this stuff that happens with your brain and is all intertwined in ways that can't be easily pulled apart.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you really want to be quote unquote writing, fully engaged in the process, you need to be fully engaged in the process. And in a similar way, our board game design, if we want to be working on certain parts of it, spitballing ideas, hashing out mechanics and whatnot, you really can't do that on your own. I can't do that with a sheet of paper in my living room, because that's not the process I've gotten myself used to over the last couple of years. It's talking to this jackass over here about how they work and whatnot, and throwing stuff and arguing and fighting and then making up and then hugging a little bit. And it's just great. It's lovely. It's sort of like how the Penny Arcade guys, I think it's Tycho, wrote in one of the, I don't remember where he wrote it, but somewhere, he's like, I don't actually like making comics all that much. I like making comics with Gabe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I like making board games. I like designing board games, but I don't like it enough that I would probably do it on my own just for the fun of it. I like working with Johannes on board games.
Yeah.
So you've got to acknowledge what's part of your creative process. And a lot of times you'll get, like, especially with writers, you'll get grief about, like, oh, look at that jack-off over there writing his f***ing novel in Starbucks. What a dick. F***ing hipster. I'm going to run him over with my car when he comes out. Screw that guy. But, dude, if your creative process works better in a Starbucks, if you get words on the page by going to Starbucks, go to Starbucks. They don't matter, the critics. Take the Teddy Roosevelt position. It's not the critic that matters. It's the man in the arena with the blood and the sweat. Go read the Man in the Arena speech. I don't have it memorized, but it's good.
That's shocking that you don't have it memorized.
I don't. Yeah, well, what are you going to do? No, whatever's part of your creative process, you just got to do the thing. Flip side, you're going to lie to yourself about what's part of your creative process. You're going to be like, oh, no, I have to have the tea that takes 4.5 hours to make, and the muffin and the thing and the this and the that, and then you never get started and just, no. No.
Yeah.
No. You've actually, it only counts if you get done. It only counts if you have product at the end of the day, whether that's story or song or board game or whatever. It doesn't count as part of your creative process unless you process creatively.
It's part of my creative process to play Xbox for 16 hours and then fall asleep in a pile of Cheeto dust.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I could claim that it's part of my creative process to fall asleep on the floor of my office every day when I get home from work.
Well, arguably it is, because whenever you attempt your creative process, that seems to be what happens.
Yeah, but I don't get anything done.
Right, so you don't create.
Yeah, it only is part of your creative process if you, in fact, create. I ranted a little there. What do you
got
for that?
That's what happened. Well, so you were talking about going back and rewriting from the top, even when you're making edits. I've actually done that several times with our rules documents for Big Man and Rift and a few other things. And it is helpful, because with a rules document, it reminds you what you're doing. And you were talking about, like, trying to remember which draft or which, you know, playthrough of a song you're on. When you're playtesting a game, and as you're going, you're like making, jotting down notes in your printed out rules or in your your notepad or whatever, saying like, oh, this didn't work, change it to this. This didn't work, change it to that. You go back and you play test again, and you're like, what are we doing with monster movement
now? What do we change it to?
We've had like 14 iterations of this, and I don't know what we're on anymore. And if all you've done is go back and change in the document, like, this is the latest thing, monster movement looks like this now, like, good luck remembering that. But mm-hmm. if you take the time to go through the whole thing, and you obviously can't do this every time when you're playtesting mm-hmm. that much, but you got to do it occasionally. Then you're refamiliarizing yourself with the rules. You look at stuff, you're like, that's what we wrote? That doesn't make any sense.
It's nonsense.
Even though it's never been brought up, maybe. We're just like, well, you know, well, we've played this game 30 times, and that rule obviously doesn't make any sense. That's got to change while I'm doing mm-hmm. this. And in... oh, you know, this should be over here. This is in the rules document twice. This contradicts itself. You start to see it as you get a feel for the game, as you get a feel for, and again, if you go back to writing a song, like you'll see the same sort of thing. You can go the second, third, 15th time through it. You'll say, now, wait a second, this thing in the first verse or chapter doesn't make any sense with that thing in the third.
Mm-hmm.
I just finished rewatching Battlestar Galactica.
I love that show.
Which is one of the greatest things ever in the history of television. And the first time you watch it, like, everything is new. And so it's not until stuff is revealed at the end that you're trying to think back like three seasons ago to like, wait a minute, what did that mean in light of this thing I just learned about this character mm-hmm. or about the universe? The second time you watch it, you kind of know that stuff. And so it's like watching the show as a completely different person.
Mm-hmm.
You suddenly know all these things you didn't know before. And if you're writing or you're designing a game and we'll stick with game design. You start off with, you know, your components and the base rules for like a turn. And then as you go the first time through, then you're like, okay, now we know how a turn works. We know how player movement works. Here's monsters. Here's how monsters work. Here's how loot works. Here's what happens. Here's the win conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Now you feel like you've got a pretty cohesive thing. Go back and rewrite those from the top after some play tests, and you're going to be like, wait a minute. Why do we have this many components that obviously doesn't work with how monsters work? That obviously doesn't work with how mm-hmm. loot works? Look at how we're having players track treasure. That doesn't make any sense with how we score it at the end of the game. And it's like the second time you go through it, or the 27th time you go through it, you're looking at it as a completely different person than who wrote it the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And so you begin to see ways that it changed. Same thing with the book. You know, your first chapter, you have an idea of where you're going, but until you've written the last chapter, you don't really know how it's going to end up.
Mm-hmm.
And you might come back and be like, why did we spend all this time in this forest? Like, that was unnecessary. Or how
that was completely necessary.
How did we get from here to there? So to take an example out of something you've written, we just spent a bunch of time in the character's hometown and it was never even referenced. Why? What? How? What? Probably we should fix that. You know,
most likely.
So
yeah.
It's
yeah.
just like, yeah, you don't know until you.
Wait,
you're
which
done
show are we talking
time.
About?
That was in. I don't remember what it's called. I'm sorry.
I don't
Laura.
Know. Oh yeah.
It wasn't the main character's hometown. It was the.
The one supporting character. You go right to where she's from, and it's
then
like
it's never mentioned.
And nobody brings it up. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make any sense with her backstory anyway that would be her hometown. So really,
yeah.
It's just a complete mess.
And that's one of those things, like, I totally missed that. I read it once, and I was like, yeah, well, whatever, fine.
And then they went to the woods.
And then you were like, did you see that this happened? Because I noticed it. And I was like, no, I did not notice that. But I'm glad you did, because apparently it matters.
Yeah.
So,
creativity.
Yeah.
You got to do it. You just got to do it.
I think that is kind of what it comes down to.
Yeah, the hardest part is definitely getting and keeping going and maintaining your momentum long enough to do it and finish it
mm-hmm.
and get it to a point where you can then show it to people and get their feedback and then continue to revise and work it from there and just keep massaging it. That part, you know, there's plenty of good advice out there on it on what to do with feedback and whatnot. I personally fall into the Stephen King camp of feedback. If a majority of your reviewers, and you need more than one, are having a problem with something, you're probably wrong and need to work on it in some way
mm-hmm.
and make some change there. But tie goes to the writer. If it's split 50-50 or less, you get to keep the thing you did.
Or if I'm one of your editors, tie goes to me because I'm smart.
Tie goes to him because he's bigger.
Oh, that's also
true. Than the other people involved.
That's also true. I think, like, you, so this is coming from... Actually, this is coming twofold. One from a book you wrote recently where you had multiple beta readers or whatever you want to call them. And I had a difference of opinion with another beta reader's input.
I believe you and the beta reader had an opposite opinion, more or less.
And then also some games that we've play tested where some people have had very different, not necessarily contradictory, but very different opinions of how things should be. You have to take into account.
Are we getting into this soup is a terrible steak?
No, but that's territory? Great. I think it's the soup is a terrible cake.
Oh, cake. It could be a bad steak, too.
That's a Daniel Solis bit that we're actually going to get into a little bit later. We're saving it for after Proto-Spiel, which any of you in the area should come to, because it sounds super cool, and we're excited to meet a lot of other board game designers. It's coming up soon. But, I'm talking about... this, again, was with Melora, and then we run into it with a couple games, particularly Big Man, where people have a lot of input, and... You need to know how to take input from a playtester or from a beta reader.
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to be able to take into account what their preference is. And it's great to have someone who has experience with board games or with books pre-read or playtest your game or your book or whatever. But if you're making a dungeon crawler, as we were, a sort of adventure-y, goofy-like game, and they're into, like... super like resource tracky minutia euro gamey, like super specific strategy games, they're going to have some good input, and they're going to have some input that's like, this lighthearted adventure game is a terrible strategy game and I don't want to do it should make these changes.
They would have some great input that would make it an entirely different game.
Or you might be writing a science fiction novel and have a beta reader who really enjoys teen paranormal romance. They're going to have some good input, and they're going to have some input that is basically, why is this science fiction book not teen paranormal romance?
Right, and most people will be able to filter that to some degree when they're offering feedback, but you do need to understand where that reader is coming from and balance it against the input of other beta readers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Definitely want to do that. While we're on the subject, I jumped to Proto-Spiel's website, and we just want to plug it a bit.
Yeah, do it.
Proto-Spiel is going to be July 10 through 12 in Chelsea, Michigan. Coming up here real fast. It's at protospiel.org. That's protospiel.org. It's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of gamer designers coming, bringing their game prototypes to test. You can get tickets, passes, whatever you call them, to go.
Yeah, I think they're passes.
They're not too expensive.
They're pretty reasonable.
And you can go and you can play their games and offer feedback and have a wonderful time. It's 3 days. There will be some publishers there, so we're going to be there.
Yep.
So the one of you listening, so Dad, you can come visit if you want.
We're going to maybe, we'll see how it turns out. We may try to do some recording from there as well. I'm super excited. I hope it's cool. There's also Proto-Spiels all over the country, so not everyone
all over
has
the world,
to come
actually.
To, oh, yeah. I've so not seen... everyone has to come to Chelsea, Michigan, though you should, because we're nearby.
I'm seeing Australia, Houston, Milwaukee, San Jose, and Madison.
Yeah, I don't think they're all at the same time. No. Maybe they are.
I don't know. Let's click a link. Let's see when the Proto-Spiel Australia was. It's loading. It's loading's fine. It is November.
Yeah, so definitely not at the same time.
Do you want
time.
To go to Australia this November?
Yes, I do, but I probably can't. But yes, I still
probably,
want to.
Probably real expensive.
To. Can you pay?
No.
Then no. So that's another insight into a sort of bigger picture of our creative process.
Yeah, I would say the things with the creative process that I have found to be true over the years is that nothing counts, no piece of advice, no system, no method, no anything, if it doesn't end with words on the page, songs written, pictures painted, games designed, whatever.
Yeah.
It's complete garbage, no matter who said it, no matter who wrote it, no matter what, if it doesn't get the thing made, because that's what creativity is, it's making a thing.
Yeah.
So don't let yourself get hung up on systems or ideas about what creativity is or is not or how it works or this, that, or the other. If it works for you, if it produces stuff that you can then give to readers and get or whoever's and get feedback on, it's good. It's a good part of your process. And you should feel happy and proud of it. And you should not be sad and you should not abuse substances unless they are prescribed by your doctor. And then you're not abusing them. You're taking them to manage a condition that you have. And that's my professional opinion as a man who once was paid a little bit of money for a thing, for writing.
A thing.
Yeah.
That's right, though. Like, whatever you're creating, the person who tells you this has no value and is bad and you should give up, that guy.
Yeah, but that guy's never going to put it that way. Specifically, he's going to put it like, this is the creative process. This is what you've got to do. And it's going to sound like he's just giving you earnest, honest advice from his experience. But what it's going to do often is dig into your mind in a way that says this is the only way to go forward. Yeah, and that because this is coming from some sort of authority figure, because they're not saying it if they don't have some position to say it. It's probably not making its way to you without that position of authority and kind of competence. It's going to say you need to keep this in mind and only do it this way.
Yeah.
When in reality, there are enough different ways to do it to go around.
So we'd like to hear from you on really basically anything to do with this topic.
We would. We like to hear from you.
And specifically, if you design board games, I would be interested to know if you have ever gotten halfway through creating a game and stopped and gone back before then, or if you complete the process entire and then go back and tweak, or if you're somewhere in the middle, something we haven't even thought of. I'd be really interested to hear about other board game designers' processes for this sort of thing, especially thinking of my friend Ben, who I think listens to this. Hope he does.
Hi, Ben.
You know who you are if you hear this. Your name is Ben, and you listen to this. So if you have things to tell us on that topic or other topics, you can hit us up on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You can send us the electronic mails at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can leave a comment on the website at mildlyalarming.com or on iTunes. Just leave us a 5-star review and write something nice in the comments.
Or you can just drink liquor till you black out and we will appear in your fevered nightmares and take your message that way.
It's where we spend most of our time, really.
Almost all of it.
So we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Yeah. Lesai, I am so le bored with French cheese. I have eaten every cheese you can eat, paired with every wine and every cracker. I have such ennui.
Every cheese you can eat?
Oui, oui. I have eaten every cheese there is.
What about unsalted bear cheese?
Sacre bleu! Bear cheese?
That's right, bear cheese. Finally aged in our cellars and made from the milk of our best mama grizzlies. And that's only one of the specialty milk products available at Lactose Larry's Oddball Dairy.
You have such as butter, ice cream, yogurt?
All that and more, Gaston. If the process starts with squeezing a teat, we've got it at Lactose Larry's. Frosty cold bottles of whipped horse cream? Yes. Fine sticks of soft, spreadable dog butter? Absolutely. Frothed chalices of fresh, hot elk milk? You bet.
That is le foul.
Quit talking, Francois, and cram some ripe pig cheese into your face hole. You can pick up our products, from berry-infused cat yogurt to sour chicken cream, at your local supermarket. Or stop right on down by the dairy to get yourself a scoop of chocolate narwhal gelato. And bring your kids to the milking zoo, where they can squeeze fluids from all the nipples they want. They could even win a chance to drink from a fire hose of salty ape whey. Lactose Larry's Oddball Dairy. Try our new moist llama curds today.
So glad to have you back on the Mildly Alarming Podcast, everybody. My name's Tom.
And I'm Johannes.
And we're here, we're podcasting straight into your ear holes from our mouth holes.
Those are the holes that we're utilizing.
That's what they're involved in. There's like wires and electronics in between. There's a lot of happening.
But
here,
mostly head holes.
Mostly it's about holes.
We haven't figured out how to work nostrils in yet, and just be thankful for that. It's been a long day. Tom's getting a little ripe. Gary may be lurking.
He's always lurking.
He lurks.
He's in your house.
He's always in your house.
Already. So, we're going to talk about WikiSleuth in a minute. But more importantly and more relevantly, we're going to talk about human breast milk first. So, my wife probably tune out from this little bit here.
Well, we were inspired by our episode sponsor. it brought to mind a story there's an establishment in Ann Arbor, which is the sort of main city around the area where we live.
Which is Washtenaw County, Michigan, since you just revealed it.
Well, not the first time we've revealed it.
You've revealed the Wu-Tang secret.
No, they know. There is an establishment called Tea House, spelled H-A-U-S, like the Chermans.
Does it have an umlaut?
I don't think it does, because why would it? That wouldn't make any sense.
I don't know how Germans spell things.
Yeah, not with an umlaut in the word house.
Okay.
And it's a pretty good tea vendor. They have, like, loose leaf tea of high quality, and you can go in there and you can just buy an amount of tea, or you could buy you could have a pot or a cup of tea and you could drink it there at a little table. And I was there years ago for reasons that I don't recall. Actually, someone we went to high school with was working there. He may still be there. That's not why I was there, though. I was just like, oh, this guy works here. But I believe the owner of the store was talking to us, because I was talking about how, like, milk and tea is dumb because it just covers up the taste of the tea. And it also turns out putting milk in tea pretty much negates all of the health benefits of drinking tea, because, like, all the antioxidants and all the other good stuff, like, bond to whatever's in the milk, and then it's useless. And she was like, oh, yeah, no, I know. And it just doesn't taste as good, too. So I was using, when I was pregnant and when I was breastfeeding, I was using my own breast milk because it doesn't do that. And I was like, oh, that's information I have now. And now that I'm not breastfeeding anymore, I use yak's milk because it's the closest analog to human breast milk that you can buy. So she imports yak's milk to put in her tea.
The thing I love about that story is that it takes place in Ann Arbor, and it's such an Ann Arbor story.
It's so Ann Arbor-y.
Like, Ann Arbor, Boulder, Colorado. There are cities, maybe Seattle.
Yep.
There are cities Portland, where that story can happen. And Ann Arbor is absolutely one of them.
Yep.
One of those ridiculous towns where you're just like, this is the only place you can live in the entire world. There is so little space for somebody like you, and God bless you for finding one of the places where you are not only welcome, but celebrated.
So we just had this brief moment, you know, kind of picturing her making a cup of tea, you know, in her business establishment, being like, boy, this needs some human breast milk. And just, you know, pulling up one side of his shirt or, like, down a low collar and just, you know, just
the sound it makes, apparently.
That's the sound.
Or, like, you know, you're on a road trip and you stop in at a Starbucks and you get a tea and you're like, oh, this needs just a little something. I regret something on that.
So say we all.
Oh, gross.
So, we wanted to revisit Wiki Sleuth now that we're done with the boob milk
now
story.
We're done talking about human breast milk. Let's talk about board games on our board game podcast.
Yep. So, because Wiki Sleuth, those of you who have been with us since the beginning, first of all, why?
Second of all, we're very, very sorry.
Third of all, thank you.
And fourth of all, why? Again, just why would you do that? Why?
Yeah.
Like, I barely show up for half of these.
Yeah.
I pay a guy on every odd-numbered episode to come in and do my part.
Fifth of all, just please don't report us.
Sixth of all, could I borrow $5?
We clearly need it. And seventh and final, you may remember that in episodes 1 and 2, we talked about a game called Wiki Sleuth.
Was that long ago?
Yeah.
Wow.
We brought up the concept in the second half of 1, and in episode 2, that was all we talked about because we lost the first half. I don't even remember what we talked about in the first half, but
That wasn't the Lost Murderous Clowns episode,
was it?
No, that's
an entire episode that no one will ever hear unless they pay us a lot of money.
Have I even heard that one?
I mean, you heard it when we were recording it. I don't know how drunk you were or if you remember it.
Anyway, we made Wiki Sleuth, and it was a game we made.
Yeah, well, mostly made. Halfway made.
Designed.
Yeah.
And Wiki Sleuth was going to involve you needing to solve crimes, and you would need to go from a clue, like a hammer or a tapestry, to a, what do you call it? What was the other thing?
Lead to a clue.
Lead to a clue, like a clue or tapestry to a, I don't know, an arsonist or whatever. And you would need to connect 2 Wikipedia articles in order to do it.
Yeah. In a given amount of time.
In a given amount of time by clicking links between the two.
And if you want to hear the really minute details, you can go back and listen to episode two, which is only like 18 and a half minutes long. So it's not the usual time sink that our lengthy episodes have become.
Right. And it turns out that we were a little bit late to the party on this one because a famous board game website, shutupandsitdown.com, did their board game news thing recently. And they reviewed or mentioned a game that uses that mechanic, basically. It's a game called Linknotize. That's Linknotize. Mm-hmm. And it involves clicking quickly from one Wikipedia article to another. And Shut Up and Sit Down, not a fan
of so Linknotize.
They gave it the Jonestown Award for Worst Party Game. For those not in the know about their famous cult mass suicides, that's what happened at Jonestown.
Yeah.
Cult, you know, that's where Drink the Kool-Aid comes from because they all drank poisonous. It wasn't actually Kool-Aid.
It was Flavor-Aid.
It was Flavor-Aid. It wasn't, it was an off-brand. But they drank it and they died. And yeah, it's not a good party. Also, a congressman died there too.
Really?
He wasn't part of the cult. He was like investigating. I think he was shot.
Oh.
It was an intense situation. Like, intense. It's real bleak.
Like camping.
Yes, but in a different way. Anyway, so they revealed Linknotize. They and apparently they were not wild about it. They said, quote, "I thought that this was kind of cool, but the instant it arrived, I saw the giant dangling problem with it. Most party games involve watching your friends perform a task, and this one, you're watching your friends silently use their phones for minutes. Can you think of anything worse? Don't answer that." No, that doesn't sound fun at all.
Yeah, and that we pointed that very problem out. Yep. We had some ideas that were not obviously universally applicable, like the big internet-enabled TV at my house. And a few other things, but we were basically saying, like, watching your friends pass a laptop around or fiddle with their phones for 3 minutes is not really interesting.
Right.
And I actually kind of wonder, does it say when this game was officially released?
It does not mention it anywhere on the Shut Up and Sit Down page, but the Linknotize homepage is copyright 2015, so I don't think it's that old.
Oh, man. Do they credit us? Because we released the rules for Wikisleuth under a Creative Commons attribution license. And I would love it. I would adore it if this company just, like, slapdash put together the quickest, like, Wikisleuth packageable game that they possibly could. I'm sure this isn't the case, but it would make me super happy.
I'm not seeing anything.
We should sue them just because. It's America. That's what we do.
It is. It's our national pastime. Lawsuits. Ball.
Lawsuits ball.
Yeah. So you throw the baseball, sue a guy. It's great.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went over to Linknotize's website, and their rules are basically what we had for Wikisleuth in terms of the wiki part of the game.
Was it down to the cards too? Like I know it's obviously not like detective themed, but
yeah, it's not detective themed, but yeah, it's got the cards like, and you need to get from A to B in the fewest number of they don't do it in time. They do it in number of clicks.
Gotcha.
So,
gotcha.
So I don't know exactly how it works, but it's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like, I don't want to take a big poop on Linknotize. Like, I don't want to pee in their Wheaties at all. I don't know if it's a good game or not.
I
want to
pee in their Wheaties just because that sounds funny.
But we can't make Wikisleuth now because of them. And I hate them because of that.
We could still do it. I mean, how many versions of whatever game are there?
I don't actually think you can copyright that mechanic anyway.
I don't think so either.
We could probably still make it.
But I don't know. Like, it answers the questions that we had about, like, you know, is this entertaining enough to support? I mean, I don't know what the specifics are of the rest of their mechanics, but obviously it doesn't work out real well. Actually, I was talking to someone on a Board Game Hour a few weeks ago. I forget what the topic even was, but like XCOM, is XCOM the board game that has an app that's like required in order to play the game?
Yeah, XCOM, the app kind of acts almost like the deck of cards would be.
Yeah.
Giving you clues and input and whatnot and what you want to do.
We were talking about, I was saying I'm excited for a time when like technology, like, so you know how like, I forget what it's called now, but there's this like, there's a few different games that do this. They come with a little like thing that's a timer, and it's got a screen with the questions on it. You're passing it around as fast as you can, and it beeps, and you've got a time limit. Like, it's really super simple. It's got like a black and white LCD screen and a timer in it.
Yeah,
that's pretty much all. But there was a time when that even being in your board game was like, oh my God, technology. Mm-hmm. And I was saying, I'm excited for a time when tech drops in price to a point where you could just have a board game, a reasonably affordable board game that comes with four or five, you know, mini tablets or phone sized mm-hmm. devices. They don't have to be, you know, an iPhone, but something capable of running Android just to do this thing.
An equivalent of a 2003 era smartphone.
Yeah, because all it has to do is run the XCOM app mm-hmm. or whatever. And that's not going to put like an unreachable price tag on your board sure. game anymore. And that would be cool for something like WikiSleuth. You know, instead of a board, it comes with a screen the size of a board with like a fold up stand, and you mm-hmm. put it on it and everyone can see what's going on the screen, so you're not just watching someone fart around on their phone. You're all being like, no, click over there, no, over there, like we're trying to catch the bad guys.
I guess the immediate question that jumps to mind there is, why not just make it an app and just use the big screen television you probably have in your house?
Because not everyone has that. I mean, you can do that. This is the other thing we talked about, was like, even with XCOM, I would hate to... We couldn't play that in our group very well. Because how many of us still have... At least two out of... Three out of six of us have flip phones still.
Well, XCOM only takes one, though.
Oh, yeah, but still. Like, so XCOM was a bad example. I've not played it. I don't know.
I mean.
But like a game that requires everyone to have a device
game?
Like
Space
that.
Team.
Space... Well, I mean, Space Team is a phone app. But yeah. Everyone has to have... A tablet or mm-hmm. or a phone. Not everyone has that. Not everyone has that as a like high on their list of things to have in life.
I guess it's funny that I'm making that case because I have a flip phone and don't want a smartphone at all. It's low on my list of things to have in life.
And I don't want to. And so I started off saying like I don't want to alienate just by platform, because like, you know, if you got to pay a certain amount to have it developed for iOS, and then you have to pay another amount to have it ported or developed all on its mm-hmm. own for Android, and then, you know, whatever, Firefox is working on a phone operating system. When's that going to come out? Windows phones, there are still people with those for some reason. There are people with no smartphones who will have to use their laptop or whatever. Now, suddenly you're developing a board game app for six different platforms, eight different platforms, and still you're going to end up with a person who's like, I have... only my pay-as-you-go track phone. And you're like, well,
I have a BlackBerry.
We tried... Yeah, that's right. That still exists. You know, we'll develop it in Java, and it'll work poorly on everyone's devices. So you don't want to alienate, and so it makes it really hard to adopt that kind of thing in a reasonably universal board game, which is one of the things that's great about board games. You don't run into the console wars and the cost, you know... the prohibitive cost of things that are like, well, you could run this if you had a top-of-the-line video card and a bazillion gigs of RAM and a really fast processor and a big monitor and, you know, by the way, then it'll run okay, but really you need a 4K TV that is at least 57 inches mm-hmm. diagonal. Like, that sucks.
Yeah.
Those things look really great if you have those things, but it's just like, hey, poor people, you don't get this. That's fine. You can just go...
And board games should be a democratizing element.
Well, I mean, at least more than video games. You know, it's cardboard mm-hmm. and paper. Like, you should be able to make that accessible.
Relatively affordable, yeah. Incidentally, speaking of relatively affordable,
mm-hmm.
with for Protospiel, which we talked about in the first section, we did a print-on-demand copy of Big Man with some a little bit higher production values.
Than what we've made ourselves on printers at work at home.
Yeah. And it ran us about $30.
Yeah.
That's affordable, relatively, compared to other things.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, like I wonder what that says about the actual production cost, but that didn't include Monster Dice treasure tokens or character.
Yeah, but those add about a dollar, maybe. Like they're not that expensive per unit.
Okay.
On his on the Print Play Games website that we used.
Yeah. I would love it. This probably isn't possible without like truly gigantic runs,
mm-hmm.
but I would love to see production cost like at $15.
That would be amazing.
It's probably totally unreasonable, but for some reason, like $15 to $17 was a number that stuck in my head.
It feels right.
Yeah.
Given the kind of gameplay you get and the kind of components you have.
That's Big Man, which we've mentioned before.
Mm-hmm. Big Man, Big Man. We should probably do an episode about Big Man.
Definitely. We should probably wait until Protospiel, get some input, get some like some legit.
Mm-hmm.
No offense, playtesters, but some other game designers input at Protospiel. See where we go with that.
Yeah.
So I guess that's what we've got for this segment. You got anything else?
Yeah. I mean, Wiki Sleuth looks like probably won't work exactly as is because, man, Shut Up and Sit Down pissed pretty hard on the idea. Like, when you compare a game to a suicide cult, that's pretty harsh.
I mean, to be fair, the thing they really, like, did not like is exactly the problem we had with
True.
It. And I would be interested to look a little bit more into Lignitize and see what
their
sort of supporting mechanics were. Because I was a lot more excited about the, like, build a case, you know, follow leads to gain... To find clues to complete a case mechanics that we created for Wiki Sleuth than I was for the click through Wikipedia. Like, click through Wikipedia was just like Wikipedia as a public resource is interesting and could be used as a game mechanic.
I kind of wonder about with Wiki Sleuth if we replaced the click through Wikipedia mechanic with a storytelling mechanic where like you just have to tell the best story for the two things you got.
Yeah, and we talked about that. And like, make the best case to the rest of the players or to an impartial judge or whatever.
What you would need there is that the other players would... Yeah, you wouldn't want to bring a judge in, I don't think. But if the other players had to then award you points or coins or whatever based on what you did, and you know, you're trying to get the highest score at the end of the game, you would then need to add some mechanic to incentivize people to not give their coins away.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you would have to. And that's why I said a judge, because it's really hard to make the players you're competing against for victory points
give you
judge
points.
You
so, and that's where I've favorable. Like, I've thought about it a time or two since then, and I was thinking about it just the other day, and that's where I've kind of got hung up, is how do I incentivize somebody to give away victory points to later earn victory points?
Right.
And I'm not sure where that would come in.
And I don't know either.
It might be something like, if you, like, you can't score coins that you had at the start of the game, maybe like they're yours and you can't score them, they don't count for you.
Yeah, you'd have to note them somehow, but
yeah, you just colors maybe.
And that only goes so far too, because once you run out of those, you're just like, I'm just not giving anyone any points anymore.
Well, yeah, but then you got to tell enough of a story to get.
Yeah, but like your giving of coins does not have any bearing on your own ability to tell
a
story.
That's true.
So it's a good start, but I it needs some work, I think.
Yeah.
But what you're right, like it's what we said, it could be a party game without Wikipedia.
Yeah, it needs something though.
So if you have ideas about what it could use, since the whole idea has been we're getting real close to overtime. If you have ideas
I had no idea
that we can steal for our game that we were already planning to release for free, so I guess it's not really stealing, it's just collaborative, let us know on the Twitters at Mildly Alarming.
You can let us know via the most electronic of mails at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You can leave a comment on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or in the review section on iTunes, where we would love it if you would give us a 5-star review. We're also on Stitcher, where I don't know if you can review us or not, but you can listen to us there.
I'm sure you can review us on Stitcher.
It seems likely.
Why would you have a podcast platform without offering a review feature?
I don't know. The one I use doesn't have a review feature.
Fair enough. Or if you say Fanciful Pat 3 times into a dark mirror, he will appear. He will powerbomb you, but then he will take any message that you want and bring it to us.
It's true.
It's very true and very scary.
See you next week.
Cheers. Hi, I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
We make a lot of the comedy jokes here on the Mildly Alarming podcast.
But what's no joke is the harm being done to our aquatic friends every day.
Every day, 11,000 sea turtles are maimed, killed, or mildly inconvenienced when people get their hands stuck.
Teenagers will dare each other to go up and touch the sea turtle, and then the sea turtle chokes to death on the chunks of those same teenagers when it eats them.
Or sometimes it just gets the chunks on its shell, staining the lustrous green and making it hard for that sea turtle to get a date.
It's a shame.
A damn shame.
Please, call 1-800-HAPPY-TURTLE now and donate all of your money to protect these majestic creatures.
Donations go to educate people about not touching sea turtles, power washing sea turtle shells, and buying me a nice house with a view of the sea.
And I'm getting plastic surgery on my butt.
Please. Donate today.
Donate today.